Welcome back in. Hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll be joined by John Glennon from SI.com and NHL.com. Coming up at 8 o'clock, we'll get his thoughts on all things Titans and Preds coming up here in the next hour. Joe, you'll be shocked to learn that Ja Morant had the top two plays on ESPN's top 10. Number two was the buzzer beater out of bounds. Number one was the dunk. I don't know, I might have flip-flopped him, but either way, you couldn't really go wrong there.
Okay, well, I've got to know then. When has that ever happened?
I don't know. I'm sure it's happened before, but it can't have happened that many times where the same guy has top two plays.
Same guy, top two plays? I mean, I got to know. I got to know, man. That there can't be many examples of that.
Steph has probably done it a few times, if I had to guess. I'm sure LeBron probably has too, but it can't be very many.
Yeah. Those two plays in the same half of basketball.
Just absolutely absurd.
The dunk one? If you look at the ref's jaw just drops.
Oh, yeah. It just
it's incredible.
It just stops. It's awesome. Yeah, good stuff from Ja Morant. No question about it. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Got a texture that says, I wasn't a Tannehill fan, and I'm not in love with him now, but don't make a second mistake and take a hope and prayer at quarterback. Wait till there are better choices. The first mistake was not going for a quarterback before now. Tannehill made a couple mistakes that cost the game. Other great quarterbacks have had those days. Draft a support staff and hold off on QB. This is coming from a texter from Paris, Tennessee. So don't reach for a quarterback now and put yourself in the same position moving forward. I think most people would agree with that.
Yeah. Again, I don't think the Titans should be like, we have got to get a quarterback. No, what? Come hell or high water, we're getting a quarterback. You know, I don't think that's the way the Titans should be looking at this at all. Yeah, but you got to do your due diligence. You know, like David Poyle with Philip Forsberg, you got to know what would be coming back in a potential deal for Philip Forsberg. If you're the Titans, you got to know every single thing you can know about all these quarterback prospects. And if it turns out you get your list and like it's, you know, 10 out of 10 or every box is checked, then you're still faced with a tough decision, which is, okay, well, do you go for the future here because you believe this is the guy, or do you help this 2022 team as much as possible and this quarterback who's still realistically going to be your quarterback, even if you do draft the guy that you think is going to be the guy?
Let's go back to the text line. Got a texter that says, draft receivers and a defensive back, right corner specifically, and beg Aaron Rodgers to come. Windows in the NFL are short. I think you can forget about the Aaron Rodgers stuff. I don't think that's going to happen.
I bet you it'll still be discussed.
I'm sure it will be discussed. I'm not going to say stunned, because stunned is too strong of a word for Aaron Rodgers. I would be pretty darn surprised at this point if he doesn't end up back in Green Bay, just based on everything going on around it. You know, there are reports that they're talking back and forth about what the deal is going to look like right now. So I'd be pretty surprised if he's not back in Green Bay.
Is he going to end this today? Is he going on McAfee?
I don't think he's going on there today.
God. I mean, come on. Rodgers, like, it's the NFL Combine. You wanted to You wanted to overtake the NFL Draft, right?
Yeah.
So here we go. Come overtake the NFL Combine, and let's drop the news and let us all move on.
Yeah, maybe so. Now, did you see the Russell Wilson stuff over the weekend? Of, like, he apparently – there's nothing Seattle in his profile on Twitter anymore. So Russell Wilson, maybe he's now available. People were reading into it.
I totally missed that. Is that right?
Yeah, there's nothing Seattle on his Twitter account anymore.
That's the new thing.
Just wipe. Scrap your social media.
Yeah. Russell Wilson's too old for that stuff.
Come well, on, now, by saying there's nothing Seattle on there, like, I think his profile picture used to be of him playing quarterback for Seattle, and now he's got, like, a picture of his family. So it's not like he's gone through and wiped all ties with the history of the Seahawks. It's just no longer a picture of him throwing the football.
That's it?
That's it. But people are running with it.
Come on.
I'm just telling you.
So he decided to put a picture of him and his family.
Well, it's his profile picture now.
On his social media.
Yeah, it's his profile picture now.
Great.
I'm just telling you what people are saying.
Good Lord. But that's different than, I mean, and seriously, like Kyler Murray actually like got rid of multiple, right?
You would have never known that Kyler Murray ever played quarterback for the Cardinals if you went through social media. Yes, there's a big difference.
Oh, man. All this stuff. Is there a headline generated on Russell Wilson putting his family on his social media?
Yes, there is.
Wonderful.
I'll
make sure to click on that.
Well, I got a texter that says, oh, my God, don't tell Jared about Russell's Twitter account. This could be – I may have just filled Jared's show today.
What does it mean?
Oh, man. Josh texting in says, do y'all not talk about the Grizzlies? Josh, we've talked about the Grizzlies for 35 minutes today.
Wait. Someone's complaining about too little Grizzlies talk. Yeah.
Look, let me let y'all behind the curtain a little bit as to how the radio business works. We talk about the things that y'all care about. Look, if it were up to me, we'd spend a whole lot of time talking about like NHL stuff all the time or NFL stuff all the time. Or if it were up completely to Joe and Michelle, we'd do 4 hours on college basketball. That's probably what we'd do.
Yes.
But it's not up to us. We talk about the things that y'all want to hear about. So – if enough people care about the Grizzlies, we'll talk more about the Grizzlies. But, Josh, we have talked about them for about 30 minutes today, and we've only been on the air for an hour.
I'm pleasantly surprised that someone complained about – because, as you know, we've definitely gotten the spend one NBA segment, and people are like, how dare you talk about the NBA?
Yeah, it's like most of the time when we start talking NBA, people really complain that we're talking NBA. So, can't make everybody happy, Joe.
This is true. This is true. I got to do something. You know, on Twitter here, Don Walker, at JDonWalkerTN, tweeted at us that Jeffrey Simmons was a lucky pick, and he tweeted the Wikipedia definition of a gambler's fallacy,
okay,
also known as a Monte Carlo fallacy, which is basically like if something happens more frequently than normal during the past, then it's less likely to happen in the future. I guess the idea being since they've only had like one good first-round pick, you know, or like really good first round pick. Now, you know, the idea that it's going to happen more frequently in the future, that's how a gambler thinks. Like basically the odds are the odds are I'm going to start hitting, you know, here at the table. Right. So it's my response to him was though, see if the whole draft was the first round, then well, you know, John Robinson probably wouldn't have a job.
Yeah.
But what about all the other draft picks that helped the Titans win the division the past 2 years? Look at the entire 2019 draft. You know, you got a guy named Derrick Henry was a draft pick in the second round. I mean, the entirety of John Robinson's draft history is not bad. First round, not good enough, no question. But you know, because the first round hasn't been good, so then the whole like, well, they get rid of the first round pick. You can't pick in the first round.
Yeah.
I mean, again, that's just you can't look at it that way. You can't. And again, it's also not, this is not roll of the dice. This is dig in and do your work and evaluate well and make good choices, not hope that the wheel hits on red.
Well, and also just because you've had a couple of first round picks that haven't worked out does not just doom your first round pick this year from the start. Now, look, we'll see. You know, people have already, I think a lot of Titans fans have already given up on Caleb Farley. And I understand it because the injuries were there, and we talked about that before he was even drafted. And then, you know, 5-6 games into his career, whatever it was, he's hurt. So that's not great. I understand that. But the idea that, like, Caleb Farley, it's just impossible that he's going to figure out moving forward, I mean, we don't know that. I don't know what Caleb Farley is going to be this year. He could come out there and be a stud. I have no clue what Caleb Farley is going to be. You know, it would be nice to get through a first-round pick this year and say, okay, not much of an injury history there. Feeling good about his health moving forward. Not much controversy off the field. Everything's feeling great after your first-round pick this year. But to that point, what were we saying after Isaiah Wilson got drafted? There was not much talk about, well, I bet he's going to go jump off the balcony here in Nashville. Like, it just
– right.
That went off the rails quick after he was drafted.
Exactly. To the point earlier about you don't know. That's why there's so many misses. It's not usually as extreme as Isaiah Wilson's case, but there are some people who are obsessed with being great, and they come in, and some people who fit into this system and don't fit into that system too. Just so many intangibles and just unpredictable things around someone's life that you can't know. You're trying to. I mean, they're trying to. That's what this week is largely about, trying to figure out if trying to figure out every single thing you can know about a person since third grade, you know, to try to project whether they're going to be a great professional and maximize their talents. But you still just can't know. I had another point to make, but I forgot.
Josh from Jackson texting in says, do you guys think getting Deontay Foreman back is a big deal or not? This is coming from Josh from Jackson.
I mean, I think it would be great, but I just don't see how it works out. You know, he would work out well as a compliment. I think that he's made himself some money here. I think he's done the work to keep himself in the league. I don't see how that's with the Titans. I mean, just again, when you add everything up, there's some things that have to go, and I think he's one of them.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll get into a wild story in college football regarding a former head coach at Baylor that had a job, now no longer does. We'll get to that coming up on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Text in SEC now to the game text line at 615-737-1025 for your chance to win a four-pack of tickets to the SEC Women's Basketball Tournament for Session 1, Games 1 and 2 coming up at Bridgestone Arena tomorrow. Text now to the text line here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, the word SEC to 615-737-1025 to be qualified to win. The winner will attend Session 1, Games 1 and 2 at Bridgestone Arena coming up tomorrow for the SEC Women's Basketball Tournament.
And that does include Vanderbilt.
That does include Vanderbilt. So make sure you get your text in now, 615-737-1025. Joe, the Art Briles situation has been very interesting to monitor over the course of the past few days. He was hired, I think, 4 days ago by Grambling State. Hugh Jackson, the head coach at Grambling State University. Obviously, Art Briles was the head coach at Baylor. He was fired back in 2016 after the sexual assault investigation, which led to an independent investigation, and he was dismissed from the program after that. Obviously, lots of bad feelings towards Art Briles about the way that was handled. If you remember the details of that case, not good. And Art Briles, not a good look from that investigation whatsoever. He was hired as the offensive coordinator for Grambling State. That, as you can imagine, Joe, was met with a lot of backlash out there on social media. Former players from Grambling State talking about it. Doug Williams was one of the outspoken players that were talking about it as well, calling it unacceptable and, quote, can't support it. And now, 4 days later, Art Briles has informed Grambling State that he will not be taking the job and he will no longer be the school's offensive coordinators. This coming from a statement that he put out there. I think Pete Thamel was the one I saw put this out there first yesterday. Just your reaction, Joe, to the Art Briles situation. Number one, why in the world did Hugh Jackson think this was a good idea to begin with? And number two, like, is any team going to really go down that road again with Art Briles? Like, why? I can't believe this has really happened at this point.
Well, I can't say no at this point because it just keeps happening. It's like he is like the holy grail of coaching or something. And again, we don't have time to revisit everything, but, you know, there are things that that happen in a college football program that ultimately – you know, there's a certain amount of responsibility that has to go to the head coach, whether there was any involvement or not. And then there's the Baylor situation when you're talking about actively trying to interfere with sexual assault investigations, which is unforgivable to me. Well, especially, you know, the way he has gone about this. I just haven't seen any real remorse. Someone correct me if I'm wrong. I know he's done a couple of interviews. You know, there was a really interesting point made yesterday by David Hale, who's a great writer in Virginia, and about the Michael Vick thing. with this as a comparison. Okay. Michael Vick, and look, I know people that are out on Michael Vick forever, and that's it. And you know what? I mean, that's certainly, you're right. I get that. I mean, it's some awful, awful stuff with him and the, you know, the dogs. And I mean, it was just terrible. He also spent time in prison. Michael Vick, again, some people are not going to buy into this. And that's fine. But I think he has, I think it, David Hale's point is like, it's looked like you want a redemption story to look like he has done all the things, said all the things and tried to make it right. And gone through, and he has paid dearly. And now I think Michael Vick, you know, is largely accepted. It's just, I'd never thought in terms of that, but when you compare it to what the way Browse has gone about it, it just seems like he's basically just hoping to wait it out and sneak in somewhere. And I have no idea what Hugh Jackson's thinking here. Like, and then Hugh Jackson puts out this, I mean, yesterday got wild with this, like his foundation.
Yeah.
You know, he puts out this thing about the foundation, including, I mean, basically defending the hire. Okay. Here's a quote from the statement that Hugh Jackson put out. Quote, "As we move forward together with Coach Briles, we ask that people keep in mind that no matter your views on this topic, please remember that people can and often do become re-traumatized and re-victimized by statements which may or may not be accurate. We will continue to support Coach Briles and all victims of assault, violence, social and racial injustices, and we will continue to provide equal opportunity for healing for everyone." End quote. So I guess also please don't ever bring this up again.
Right.
And it's, and then like the tax situation of his foundation, you know, comes up, and then there's a back and forth with Dan Murphy, reporter ESPN, who digs in on this a little bit. Like 75% of this foundation's money was spent on the salary of the executive director of the foundation.
Just an absolute mess.
It just the whole thing. So then this is all going on, and then finally Brown's like, all right, I'm out. And again, he should understand too. And look, for people who are like, well, can you ever be forgiven in this world? Again, I mean, I think I just put out an example there, I think, with Michael Vick. Yes. But I don't think that Art Browse has really gone about this, you know, the right way. And look, the bottom line is, when you look at the details of Baylor, especially for people out there, you know, Brenda Tracy is very outspoken. She is a survivor of sexual assault. She does she travels around and talks to teams. I mean, I've interviewed Brenda. She's terrific, and she's very outspoken. And, you know, I kind of go to her on things like this because, I mean, like her immediate response was like, thank you to everybody for pushing back on this. You know, survivors of sexual assault, what are you saying to them? What are you saying to them when you say, yeah, let's hire Art Briles, you know? And I don't think people think about it in those terms enough.
Well, I agree. And Art Briles, to me, like, obviously he's a good football coach, but some things are more important than being a good football coach. And, you know, maybe that's naive of me to think. I know what college football is, and I know what it has been, and ultimately it's about winning. I think we know that at this point about college football.
Yes.
But if you're Hugh Jackson, like, I just don't understand what the benefit is here. Number one, Art Briles is 66 years old at this point. So, you know, he's getting up there in age in terms of how much longer does he even want to try to entertain. I guess that's the most surprising part to me about this is, like, why does he want to put himself through this? Like, if you're him, do you not know that this is going to be the reaction if you take a coordinator position? Like, it's almost like with the statement that Pete Thamel put out there yesterday, he's like, well, I don't want to be a distraction. It's like, well, what did you think was going to happen when you took this job? Like, it almost feels like this took him by surprise, and I can't for the life of me figure out why that would be the case.
Well, it didn't, but again, like, the whole thing is like, it looks like him trying to sneak in and hope that maybe this time it's not quite as bad and you hold on and you get in there. Yeah. I don't know why the fascination with Art Briles. Was Art Briles going to just transform Grambling? Like, I don't know. It's already, there are enough challenges, you know, for Hugh Jackson. I just, like, is this some huge accelerator for your program to bring in Art Briles? I mean, it's a distraction. And the thing is, even if this would have If they would have held firm with this, then it would have been a continued distraction.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't understand what Hugh Jackson is thinking there. My guess is, at least for the next little bit here, no one's going to try to hire him at this point. Like, I can't see how, if you're especially, you know, a big-time college football team, you know, Grambling is one thing. I can't see anybody trying to hire him at this point based on the way this just went, even if you wanted to. Like, why would you even want to put yourself down that road if you're a program out there? I would hope this is probably the last time that he's going to get a shot.
Well, and if you're him, I guess, you know, is it that important? Obviously it is, but it's, I mean,
like he kind of faded off into the distance the last game. What's he been doing? Coaching high school football? Like,
we did that, and there was a big, you know, there was a huge stink made about that, and yeah, and then wait, did he go to Italy?
He went to Italy as well,
right?
Yeah,
he went to Italy. I mean, I suppose it's like compare him to like Rick Pitino, for example,
right?
Like Rick Pitino went overseas, and he's at Iona, and I think, you know, at some point we may see Rick Pitino get another opportunity at a higher profile program. But again, Rick Pitino's issues were NCAA violations. I mean, there was some ugly stuff around it, but it's not what happened with Art Briles. It's not at all the same thing.
No, it's not. I couldn't really believe the hire at the time, and you know, with as much backlash, I wondered if this would happen at some point. I wasn't convinced that it would happen with the statement that Hugh Jackson put out there, but Art Briles putting it out there yesterday that he's not going to be the offensive coordinator at Grambling. So a wild story on that front in the world of college football. When we come back, we'll get into the Nashville Predators. Preds fans, how do you feel about David Poile now at the helm 1 year later from the brink, what we were talking about this time last year? We'll get to that coming up on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Tuesday morning. Taking your thoughts on our text line, Mark from Paris on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Do you guys think that the NFL will give Gruden a second chance? I used to like Gruden, but after those emails came out, I'm very disappointed and disgusted. This coming from our friend Mark from Paris. What do you think about that, Rex? Do you think Gruden ever gets a second chance?
It's a good question, and I don't know. But like, again, like that, like, let's compare the situations. You know, this goes back to like last week talking about like the, you know, the tweets from the photographer. Now, granted, you're talking about the leader of an organization, some horrible stuff in those emails. But to me, like, that doesn't compare to like the Briles situation.
Yeah.
You know, the Briles Baylor situation was just, I mean, I don't even know. I don't even know how best to characterize it. Disgusting for sure. But like, that was way beyond like someone saying or sending offensive material. This was like, again, actively, you know, involving yourself in investigations.
Yeah.
I mean, and trying to interfere, which is, I mean, think about that. I've never heard, there's been a lot of, look, there's Title IX lawsuits. There have been a lot of situations of various programs, including Tennessee, Michigan State, Pennsylvania. There are a lot of different investigations at Title IX. Thing, you know, that are kind of similar. None of them, and again, even go to the Penn State thing, that's its own separate thing, and that was awful, awful, awful. Jerry Sandusky and Joe Paterno, like, but the Baylor thing is different. I mean, it's different than all of them, because you actually have, you know, you have accounts of the head coach, you know, getting involved in stuff that should never be considered, and in those other places, it was not. So, then you're going to compare it to a Gruden situation. I don't know with Gruden. It'll be interesting. But to me, there should certainly be a path there before there's a path for Briles.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. Joe, the Preds back in action tomorrow, coming up against the Seattle Kraken. They're on the road this week, going to Seattle tomorrow. They'll take on San Jose coming up on Saturday night. I think back to this time a year ago, and it was a little bit earlier, probably mid-February last year, the conversation around David Poile and the Predators. The Predators were struggling. They looked like they were going to be one of the worst teams in the league. And, of course, we know what happened. They turned things around. They started to play much better. UC Saros had like a 940 save percentage coming down the stretch, and they end up making the playoffs. But the noise got pretty loud from Preds fans on David Poile last year. And there's a lot of talk about his job status. Can you trust David Poile to do the rebuild that we thought was coming? All these different things that were talked about with David Poile. You fast forward to a year later, the Preds are not in a rebuild at this point. They're in a playoff spot right now. Obviously, we'll get to the Forsberg part of this that could change the picture as they move forward here. But the Predators have overachieved by virtually everyone's expectations this year. And David Poile made some moves this offseason to get rid of Ryan Ellis, to get rid of Victor Arvidsson, to make this team younger. He protected Tanner Jeannot. And now the team sits here in a playoff spot as of today and kind of still fighting for the top three in the Central Division as well. So how do you think that Preds fans have changed on David Poile? Do you think Preds fans have changed their outlook on David Poile? And what's your sense on the credit that Poile deserves to what we're seeing right now from the Predators as they try to forecast forward here? We've talked a lot about John Hines and the identity of this team and the way that they play and all these different things. How much credit does Poile deserve from what we've seen in your mind?
Yeah, it's kind of amazing to think back a year, really, right? About a year. When it just before last season's team turned around and got to the playoffs, and you start to see, okay, look at the young guys, look at some of these pieces that are actually kind of promising, and look at how Saros is playing, all that stuff. At that point, a year ago, well, first of all, I remember we talked many times about the whole, the fire Hines thing, which again, to me, I said it many times, like you cannot possibly, and I know it's the NHL, so I guess you can, but like the idea that you would quickly just move on and fire this coach that Poile just moved when Poyle's been here forever. Like if you look at someone to fire, it's gotta be Poile, right? And of course that got into the whole, who would do that? You know, who speaks for the ownership group and all these things. So to me, it's changed a ton in a year. I mean, they're good. So they're good. And he's gone on a run. Look, he had a run of moves. Like he had a heck of talk about the gambler's fallacy there earlier with the listener on Twitter. You know, it's like you get hot, you get cold at the table. Poile had gone on a run of moves that really had either not worked out or just been disastrously bad.
Yeah.
And it was it's funny because you can also kind of tie that to, I mean, obviously the Subban move worked, but then the moves, successive moves to go for it, right? The go for it moves were not working at all. And you kind of look at the Titans, kind of that situation too, after getting to the AFC title game. So he was on a heck of a run, and now he's on a run of some good moves. I mean, not across the board, but so I don't know if that means – is he a streaky GM? I don't know. Is he like Philip Forsberg, gets hot and gets cold? But I do know that he's settled things down. Now, what does the Predators – I think you still have to think like long-term, like, at some point he's probably going to retire pretty soon. Right? I would think. I don't know that for sure, but I would think he would be retiring pretty soon. What does that mean for the future of the franchise? But the whole, like, Poile's got to go. He's, like, the game's passing by. He can't make any more good moves. I mean, that's been totally quieted because he's been making some good moves.
Well, it's interesting to think about this because those two moves specifically that I brought up this past summer, Victor Arvidsson being traded to L.A., Ryan Ellis being traded to Philly. Like, so far, the return from what you've gotten for Ryan Ellis has not been good. Like, Philip Myers, to me, he's a seventh D-man in the NHL at best right now. And quite frankly, it's not been good to watch out there most of the time with Philip Myers. So the return on him has not been great. And Cody Glass, which was really the centerpiece of that deal you got back, has barely played for you. And, you know, he's playing well in Milwaukee right now, but you didn't get Cody Glass back to play well in Milwaukee. I mean, you want him to be a big part of your team as you move forward here. So the return itself really has not helped the Predators all that much at this point. Now, I will say, just getting that Ellis contract out from underneath you looks like that's going to be a pretty good move for the Predators. Ellis has played four games this year, and Philadelphia has completely shut him down. So he's played a grand total of four games for the Philadelphia Flyers. So that part of it looks great. It's just interesting because those are the two big moves he made this offseason. And right now, like tangibly on the ice, you don't really have anything to show for it if you're the Predators. They just have gotten a lot better. They've gotten younger, and some guys that he drafted years ago, like your Carriers and your Janos, which he wasn't drafted. He was picked up as an undrafted free agent. Some of the moves you've made to get younger have worked out for you. And now some of the longer-term deals, like Matt Duchene, that you were getting crushed for last year, they're playing much better. So I think people's viewpoint on that is different. But it is interesting, like the two big moves he made this past offseason in terms of the trades, the return on that really hasn't done anything for this team other than free up some cap space, which I think could be big as they move forward here.
Yeah, but they're timely. You know, the positive is that you got rid of the negative.
For sure. Like, I'm not saying that as a criticism of Poile. I'm just saying, like, usually when you talk about a trade helping you, it's because a return has come back the other way and it's helped you. And really, right. It's not happened. Just you don't have those – you're not paying those two guys anymore.
Yeah, and look, some of this is – Poile is just like everybody else. Like, hey, Matt Duchene, is he going to be good? Please be good, Matt Duchene, yeah. You know? That's the thing. I mean, so right now, like, that move before this season was just the latest in a long line of, oh, what did you do? Now, even though, of course, everybody hearing this now is like, yes, you have to do this.
Yeah.
But it was the latest. It was part of the streak. That was part of the streak of bad moves, and now it's no longer part of the streak of bad moves. I don't know if it, like, I don't know what it is, but all I know is Matt Duchene's having a heck of a year, and he's earning the salary this year that you gave him.
Well, that's the thing. Like, with those two guys, like, how do Predators fans feel about those two guys right now? Because that's, a big part of how you feel about Poile is, like, those two gigantic contracts, how do you feel about them? Because, I mean, there are still some that say, yeah, it's great that they're playing well right now. They're still not worth the contract that they've been paid. So what do you do about that as you move forward here? Like, I don't know. I mean, to me, if this is the version of Matt Duchene you're going to get for the next couple of years, then I'm cool with it. Keep on going, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, if Matt Duchene gets like 35 goals this year, I mean, it's not far off from what he's getting paid. You know, I mean, now you got to, you know, you hope he does it next year, but
sure.
In this given year, yeah, that's pretty close. And, you know, Johansson, that's another thing with Johansson. It's like, first of all, you always have the, who won the trade? Well, it was a good trade. Okay, I mean, come on. Like, that's already been established. Like, all things that have happened but way before this, to me, have already, like, it's over. The scoreboard is – you can like, you know, verify the score sheet, okay? It was already a good trade.
Yeah.
And you can look at him and say, maybe that's not quite $8 million a player, but I still say he plays the way he's played this year.
You'll take it.
It's not like last year. Yes, with both of them, it's like, oh, this is such a drain for so little return. That's not the case anymore. And so, yeah, those two guys and how they have played this year and how they respond in the offseason, that's a big part of a different viewpoint on Poile.
Preds fans, how do you view David Poile now that the Predators are in a playoff spot? Their trajectory appears to be moving upward. We'll get a lot of your thoughts to get to on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Pre Reds fans, join us for Smashville Live this Wednesday on 102.5 The Game. The show will air on Wednesdays during the Preds season from 6 to 7 p.m., featuring Preds players, former players, and other special guests. You can watch the show via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Facebook page, YouTube, and Twitter. So be sure to join us this hockey season for Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Talking Preds. What are your thoughts on the job that David Poile has done? We'll take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. William from Dover, texting in, says, I feel like Poile does a good job of trading players right before they fall off. Weber, Subban, Ellis, Arvey all look like good timing. This is coming from William from Dover. It is kind of amazing. I was thinking about that the other day and talking about that with somebody in the press box of, you know, some of these trades that you've made, if you're David Poile, yeah, a lot of them haven't worked out when you're trying to add. But when you are trading off some of these players, they have worked out timing-wise where, you know, Ellis has been out for the whole year this year pretty much. Arvidsson's playing okay out there in L.A. Shea Weber and the injury problems that he's had. You know, it is kind of amazing the timing on some of these trades.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like, that's the part of the Duchesne trade that, you know, you just – who cares when Duchesne is – and I know it's not a trade, but we all knew. I mean, shoot, I remember you and I talking during that postseason. Well, like you knew what was going to happen. They were going to move Subban. They're going to clear the space. They're going to go after Duchesne, right? The fact that Duchesne was not working out kind of overshadowed, as it should have, but overshadowed the fact that it was perfectly timed on the Subban situation with his health breaking down. So that is a good point. Now, he's also brought in some guys who, you know, in the last few years who have not come close to what they were supposed to be, what he thought they were. And, you know, he's still paying for Kyle Turris to not be here for the next few years. Let's not forget that. It's $2 million a year off the, you know, that you got to pay each year for Kyle Turris to not play for you. You know, and obviously the – it's also been, I mean, like Ryan Hartman, for example. I don't know why it didn't work out here at all. You know, there was just so little. There were a few stretches with him that were okay. But, you know, better player before and after here.
Well, it was the price too, right, to go get Ryan Hartman. Like, you're giving up a first rounder for Ryan Hartman. Now, again, Ryan Hartman this year has 37 points in 50 games, 19 goals, 18 assists. Like, if incredible. That was the player that he was, if he was the player here that he is at right now in Minnesota, like, you'd take that all day. I don't mind getting a first-round pick for that.
Well, Ryan Hartman, he was supposed to be, because, you know, he'd had a 20-goal season with the Blackhawks, and he was supposed to be the kind of the agitator with skill idea, right? And he was an agitator.
Didn't display much.
He did that. I mean, he pissed people off.
He was skilled at agitating people. Yes.
Yes. Yes. But then again, it was just like this run of, man, and you know, all the moves in 2019, the net front presence moves. Just anybody, please, someone big and strong, you know, Wayne Simmons, please, you know.
Well, Granlund was on that same day, and Granlund, for the first part of his career here, wasn't good. Like, he was not, wasn't good is probably a stretch. He was nothing like what we see right now.
Underwhelming.
Yes.
Well, he was not what he had been in Minnesota, and he was certainly not what he is now. And I think Granlund is probably a good example of, I mean, you don't know because players go through ups and downs, but it seems to me like he's a good example of just some players fit some coaches / systems better than others, and or just some coaches have a really good feel for certain players and how to use them. Because I mean, how else do you explain it?
Yeah, I mean, well, and I think sometimes it's just it's system, and everybody points to that, but it's also, I think, trust, right? Like, it's pretty clear from the moment that John Hines got here, he watched Granlund play. He was like, all right, well, I can trust that guy to take care of things, especially on the other side of the puck. And then offensively, you know, I think that allowed Granlund to take off after that. But, you know, sometimes when you come to a new team and you're not immediately – and think about this, too, and people forget about this. Like, when Granlund first got here, like I'm pretty sure his wife was having a baby like that day. Like it was pretty crazy the time he first got here. So, I mean, there's a whole lot of human parts of this that go into it as well. But for whatever reason, like right when John Hines took over, Granlund seemed to take off, and he has not slowed down since then. Liam on the text line says, I give Poyle all the credit in the world for not blowing it all up and starting over. This season has been a ton of fun. I hope they can keep it up. Caleb on the text line says, not sure if you guys have talked about it, but what's the absolute latest on Forsberg? That will determine my opinion on David Poyle. This coming from Caleb on the text line. I do think there are Predators fans that are kind of in wait-and-see mode about David Poyle as to what happens with Philip Forsberg.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair because, look, if he's gone and you know they don't do anything significant this year and then they don't trade him for assets and then he goes somewhere else, then people are going to be mad at David Poyle all over again. I don't know if they're going to be as mad at David Poyle as they were, again, right around a year ago or for the stretch when it really was going in the wrong direction, but they're going to be mad.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's still a ton of different opinions on Forsberg and what to do with him anyway. Like, you know, there's people in my Twitter mentions last night after Preds Insiders going back and forth with each other. Like, the 8-year deal, should you give it to him or should you not? Should you trade him at the deadline or should you not? Like, I think there's a lot of different opinions on that from Preds fans. Now, I've tried to say this delicately, but I'm not going to be delicate about it much anymore. Like, if you think that the Predators are going to sign Philip Forsberg for anything less than 8 years, I think you're nuts. Like, I could be wrong, and, you know, maybe Philip Forsberg signs a 6-year contract or a 3-year contract or whatever. I think that'd be incredibly stupid on his part to do that. So, like, if you're out there thinking that you're going to sign Philip Forsberg to a 3- or 4-year deal, or I saw a 6-year deal get floated out there last night, like, I just don't think you're living in reality. To me, it's going to be an 8-year deal or it's going to be nothing here with the Predators.
That's 100%, because that's the advantage the Preds have. They can offer 8. No one else can. And the money's guaranteed, so that means they can offer more, you know, just by that. So you have to. I mean, if you're going to get into this, then you have to go 8. And, you know, then you keep, you know, obviously you're whatever the number is. I think you're right. I think it's going to be in between 8 and 9. Elliot Friedman has done some reporting on that too. And it has to be 8. And then whatever the number is, you multiply it by 8, and that's the money he's definitely getting. So someone else has to give him that much money in 7 years.
But that's when it's interesting for the Poyle side of this, because there are some people that say, I'm going to be out on David Poyle if he gives Philip Forsberg an 8-year deal. And there are some people that say, I will be out on David Poyle if he doesn't give Philip Forsberg an 8-year deal.
Well, the first people you don't understand what's going on here.
Yeah.
You don't understand how this works. Now, the no movement clause, I don't know about that, but I bet you that's going to go Forsberg's way. That'd be my guess.
It's my guess.
I think that's where this gets done, is because Poyle comes to them on that, but we'll see. I'm just guessing from outside, man.
Call your shot Tuesday. Nate on the text line says, I understand Poyle isn't getting any younger and he wants to win now, but he needs to stand pat at the deadline. The only move should be signing or trading Forsberg if he doesn't sign before. He got lucky with Granlund, but it probably won't have the same outcome if Forsberg goes to market. He needs to know what he has with this team, so let it ride. The 16-17 cup run will always come up, but it was an anomaly and is completely different from what's going on now. If Poyle lets Forsberg walk for nothing, he should probably be gone. This is coming from Nate on the text line.
Yeah, it's not an anomaly. I mean, I think the next year proved it wasn't an anomaly. I mean, you can't count on it. It's hard to do, very hard to do. But, and I understand, hey, they were the 16th seed, man. So how would it not be an anomaly? Same team went and won the President's Trophy the next year, good enough to win the whole thing. That team that made the run was good enough. Yeah. It was, you know, they found some things that they'd kind of, and they'd been banged up during the regular season a little bit, whatever. I think anomaly is a little bit strong of a term, but I don't necessarily disagree on the standing pat thing, other than a low cost add. And yes, for sure, there is no way that Forsberg is going to market this summer, and you're going to have the Granlund situation. That is 100% guaranteed. Someone will sign Philip Forsberg.
Well, someone will sign him for sure. I just, you know, Friedman was talking last week on DDC. Like, if you better be sure if you don't trade him, if you're David Poile and there's no deal by the deadline, you better be pretty sure that you can sign him as they continue to have negotiations. Like, to me, though, that's probably not the way the Predators want this to happen. I would imagine no. The Predator side of things, they want this to be done here in the next couple of weeks.
It's possible, certainly, that you could end up still signing him, but that's got to be that deadline has got to be like in red letters right now in that office. Like, get it done before the trading deadline.
Let's quickly go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Ryan from Nashville. Ryan, what's going on?
Hey, guys. For Forsberg, first of all, it needs to be an eight-year, $8 million, and a limited no trade, a limited no movement. That would get the deal done probably with him. He's not going to get more than nine, which some fans want him to get because he's not getting more than Yossi. And I would like Poile at the trade deadline, not to blow it up, but to look at, like, trading something, maybe trying to talk to the Islanders, see if maybe if Char would be available for trade or if Kyle Palmieri would be available for trade. Because I think, A, Char would be a better fit. I like Harper, but he'd be a better fit for the playoffs than Harper would be. And Palmieri is a guy Hines liked when he was at Jersey, and he fit the system, and he knows the system would fit probably right in and slot either on the second line with Johansson, or he could slot him on the fourth line with McCarron and whoever else he wants to throw down there.
Hey, thanks for the call, Ryan. We appreciate it. The $8 million part of it, I think Forsberg will get more than eight. I think you're talking 8.5, somewhere around there. I don't think he gets more than Yossi. And I think if you're Forsberg, you need to be realistic about that too, right? Like, I don't think you're getting more than Roman Yossi here. And that's when the eight-year deal part of it could come in handy for the Predators. Because if it's
exactly,
you know, it's $68 million. Let's say it's an eight-year, $8.5 million contract. That's $68 million. Well, if you go to market and you're getting a seven-year deal, the max deal that another team can offer you, at that point, they've got to offer you, you know, $10 million a year to get to 70.
Right.
So the cap hit is much different for teams there too.
That's why for anybody saying at this point, for anybody saying less than eight, in NHL contracts, you total it up, multiply the years by the number, and that's how much money they're getting.
Yeah.
So Philip Forsberg, now you got to go to 10 to beat that. That's why the eight-year thing is such an advantage for the Preds, and they should take advantage of it.
When we come back, we'll be joined by John Glennon from SI.com and NHL.com. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans as they prepare for the combine, get his thoughts on the Forsberg situation for the Preds as well. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.